Yeah, Steve, but how many of them are underwater on a water ski dealership?
How many of them are underwater on a Ford F-150 Lightning Raptor Superback 9000 Turbo XL?
That's not fair, Steve.
F-350
NASCAR edition.
It's called the Chevy Suburban High Country Z28 4x4.
Oh, you were much better than me. That sounded accurate. That sounds like a real model. Like, if I go on Car Ruse, Car Gurus, and ask for that shit.
Welcome back to the Triglottero Troika. This is Steve, along with the other Steve.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And Ryan.
So I got these Modelos. They're like the Chelada Modelos, but it's specifically like the lime and salt ones, which are like...
Where'd you get those? Washington Heights? Where'd you get those?
Publix while I was waiting on
Mochelada.
And then Ryan started singing from In the Heights.
It's the lime and salt one, which is like the new hotness all the breweries trying to do. Like Rogue has I think they're calling it like the Mexican lager. It was really like, they're just adding like lime and salt to it. It tastes good, okay. Whatever. So the one that Modelo put out, when I tell you that salt should be like capitalized next to the word lime, like holy,
I love salt.
Fuck.
Like I love salt, so like you won't upset me, but like I feel it you. There can be too much salt. Trust me.
It very much reminds me of the Gatorade rehydrates or whatever that are like extremely fucking salty.
Yeah, because you gotta get the potassium and salt helps it. So
I was not ready for it the first time I took a big swig of that Gatorade. I was like, what the fuck.
Yeah,
Steve wants a bourbon and branch, but he wants them to like get the branch from like the ocean, just like dip it into the water, and then
yeah, I want like amoebas and all kinds of shit swimming out my trachea, you know. And now with that imagery, let's talk about Andrew Jackson.
If you like salt, you will like these Modelos. I'm not a salt hater, but this is just very
well. You know, I can't really afford salt right now because I lost thousands of dollars on Friday. So we'll see.
Oh my god!
I saw it, and I was telling my roommate about it. That I noticed yesterday that our neighbors around the bend had bought a Tesla, and it was a red Tesla, like Nazi flag red Tesla. God. I was like, oh no. And then I was walking by it after I'd gone shopping, and I noticed that they had a sticker on it that was like one of those or a magnet that said like, love the car, hate Elon. And like, well, you're still giving him a lot of money. Like, at least I know that they're not like, you know, down with the tenets of National Socialism.
Yeah.
My favorite one was seeing the Tesla Cybertruck that put like the Toyota lettering on the background. I fucking died.
Oh yeah.
What a way to say fuck Elon and fuck this car.
And it was a Cybertruck too, like,
oh no, a bright red Cybertruck.
No, the neighbors had a bright red like
Model
I think
S
it was a Model
or...
Y.
Oh yeah, the Y is like the, I think, yep. That's the cheapo one.
The Cybertruck was what somebody had lettered Toyota on the back of, like the old terrace wagon.
Yeah,
like,
I saw it. It's in New York. Yeah, it's in New York.
Yeah. You want to talk about a truck? Now that's a truck.
That's a fucking truck, boy.
You can overthrow a sub-Saharan government in that truck. I tell you what.
I need you to put together an episode of why the Toyota Hilux is the greatest pickup truck in the history of modern.
He doesn't have to.
Yet not available in.
It speaks for itself, Ryan.
It speaks for itself, and also there's been multiple documentaries about it on YouTube. So
they don't. They don't want us to have the Hilux, yeah. Ryan, because it would. It would destroy the American mind.
The problem with the Hilux, I think, is that there's no obsolescence in it.
This.
Right? Isn't that the whole thing? Is that it has no obsolescence in it? Like, it just, it runs fucking forever, and we can't have that in the U.S. market.
Pretty much.
I'm pretty sure that's what it is. I don't think it gets good gas mileage or anything. I think it's just, it just
doesn't
break. Yeah,
it's a pickup truck.
there are pickup trucks that get good mileage, but...
It's a truck version of the Civic. It's interchangeable with fucking a million trillion different Civics that are on the road, and the thing will ride forever if you take the barest care with it.
So the short answer
that's why I drive Toyota.
So we're completely wrong. The short answer is it exceeds all standards in the U.S. because it adheres to European standards. So they're way higher than U.S. standards for cars. But the reason it won't sell here is because it doesn't weigh enough. to qualify for an emission, like I think emission regulations. Like that was the whole thing with Cash for Clunkers, I guess, was that the cars were too, they weren't heavy enough, and that's why trucks got so big.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't know if you noticed this, but trucks were a lot smaller like 20 years ago. Do you remember
that?
They
were great, like the Ford Ranger as a perfect example.
Yeah, that's why if you have like a Datsun pickup truck, people will be trying to buy it off you.
I just watched, I don't know if you guys have seen the movie Two Jurors, or Juror Number Two, sorry. I confused it with Two Popes.
I've heard of it.
The Clint Eastwood movie that has like the most ridiculous premise.
Dude, it actually was a decent movie. Like it was worth watching, and we were kind of like on the edge of our seats because we didn't know where they were going to go with it. Mm-hmm. I will admit I was high, but you know, it kind of makes everything a little bit more entertaining. But at the same time, it was okay. But in the movie, he has a Toyota 4Runner, the main protagonist. It's got to be like a late 90s, maybe like early 2000s 4Runner. So you know, an immortal car. And I put out a what's it called? I can't even remember the name of the fucking platform anymore. What's that shit? Blue Sky? I posted on Blue Sky and said, you know, the biggest crime committed in this movie was that at the end of the movie, he sold the 4Runner. I was like, dude, what an asshole. You could shoot a fucking nuke at a 4Runner and it would probably just still like hit first gear at least.
You go on Auto Trader? 4Runners from the 90s will still go for $30,000 easily.
Not $30,000, but like, you know, if it's got like 200,000 miles on it, you're paying like $8,000-$9,000 for it. And it's a shitty car. A low mileage one? Yeah. You're not finding one though, dude, because everyone knows what that car's for. You know, they're going to put 9 billion miles on it because it won't die.
Yeah, you find the rare like NRFB like ass 4Runner, you know, never removed from box, like finding like that toy from your childhood that's worth like $200,000, but you find it for like $20 at some mom and pop store because they had it shoved in the back.
Oh my god, barn finds are like always my biggest thing. I'm just like, god, let me find a car that's in like excellent condition, just covered with like 6 inches of dust because somebody's son went off to die in some just unjustified shitty foreign war, and like they just couldn't do anything with it.
Now my son, he went off and he died in the Bosnia wars, and we had his car there in the barn for 30 years now.
Something he my son went to fight in somewhere Rhodesia. Actually, you know what? I don't want that car. You're good.
It would probably be a pretty sweet 70s car, but it would also probably have like the General Lebo with the Nazi flag on the top.
It would be like Knight Rider, but it would be like fucking George Wallace coming out of it.
Okay, tell me about FBI crime statistics.
So this is the deal with the trucks, and I'll shut up about it. I guess back when Americans were, the 1973 oil crisis, when we were confronted with the reality that gasoline wouldn't always be cheap, the U.S. decided to impose regulations about fuel efficiency. Okay, so we all know about that, right?
Right.
Yeah. So problem was, different vehicle manufacturers have different product alignments. So say Toyota's, or say Troy's Trucks, this is from Reddit, as a Reddit post, specialized in pickups and vans, and Carter's Compact Car specializes in coupes. If you passed a law that said thou shalt not sell vehicles with worse than 20 miles per gallon, then Troy's would have to significantly redesign their vehicles to comply with the standard, while Carter's would meet it effortlessly, and that wouldn't be fair. So the regulations, formerly known as CAFE, Corporate Average Fuel Economy, were written to have separate standards for passenger cars and light trucks. And there's a mathematical formula that makes fuel consumption targets related to the wheelbase length and the width of the vehicle. So that makes the standards more lenient for large vehicles than for small ones, and gives them a perverse reason to build bigger cars. Fucking stupid.
Dumb as shit.
But okay. Stupid. Today it's just dumb. It's fucking stupid. Anyway.
Speaking of other really stupid fucking...
I'm sorry, I get really mad things. When I see huge trucks. Sorry, I just get so mad. I see some douchebag rolling around in like a $90,000 truck that... And he works at fucking, like, you know, Suncoast Video or some shit.
I can't fucking stand it. It's obnoxious.
Oh, it's so ridiculous.
When you need a stepladder to get into your vehicle.
The idea that, like, your average person is not spending the money on, like, a fuel-efficient car that looks good. Like, dude, you can get a Hyundai Sonata N-Line for, like, $25,000 used with, like, 30,000 miles on it. That's 300 horsepower and 40 miles per gallon. What the fuck else would you ever buy?
Sorry, guys. We have to end this episode early because I have to spend 10 minutes climbing into my truck to go to my job at AT&T.
He's got two ladders. It's a step stool that he puts a ladder on, and then he gets in. And then get it out, he's got to use one of those grabbers to reach down and grab it and then pull it up into the truck.
I have to rappel down.
Yeah.
It's like in Gundam, I have like a rappelling system that I have to use to get into the vehicle.
You know how like some cars have the noise when you open the car door? Steve's plays like the A-Team sounds, and he just fucking rappels out. Dun, 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 dun. Speaking of the A-Team.
So last time we had talked about Andrew Jackson's continuing presidency, how he had narrowly gotten out of sort of the nullification crisis, which is going to come back during the American Civil War. It's kind of funny because I was like talking with my dad over a couple weekends ago, and just unprompted, he was talking about, because we were talking about Donald Trump and how he likes these like old presidents that nobody like cares about or likes, like Polk or like McKinley or all these other ones that he obsesses over.
What about James K. Polk?
Yeah, that guy.
And then my dad was like, he's like, and I mentioned Andrew Jackson. My dad just went off about like. That Andrew Jackson just made like every wrong decision every time of his presidency. Like he ruined the economy. He did all these things bad. So he doesn't really understand why people like him. Other than the fact that he was racist and he was a general at one point.
Racist doesn't even begin to describe it.
But it just sort of goes into.
He that was also, the kind of racist where you advocate for the death of another people. Like that's but, not
yeah,
racist. He
wasn't, yeah.
That's yeah. Like, he was genocidal.
Yeah.
Here we go.
That goes beyond racism.
But the interesting Trump's thing is about the
racist.
Yeah, and he wasn't choosy either because he did the Bill Clinton thing and picked the lady that was near him.
But the thing with the nullification crisis is that he supports like states' rights and slavery and all this, but going against the nullification crisis, essentially saying that states can't like Trump. Federal legislation, right. He slows down what eventually becomes the Civil War. And because he slows that down, the chances of the South actually gaining independence diminish every year from this point. Because the industrial advantage, the population advantage, the technological advantage just becomes increasingly in favor of the Northern and Midwestern states, which the majority of the Union soldiers during the Civil War were from the Midwest. They were from like Ohio, Pennsylvania, like all these other states, and they were also the people who grew the food. So by the time the war rolls out, you know, there's a 2-to-1 advantage against the Confederacy, and they don't have any of the technological advantage or anything like that. So Andrew Jackson even works against his own interests by going against nullification.
I tell you, Steve, other than the Bass Pro Shops pyramid, we still got the advantage in the North. Because, I mean, you're not taking that pyramid, you know? I don't care what kind of munitions you use against it.
That's the beauty of it, Steve. You don't have to take the pyramid. You just take everything around the pyramid, and then you just wait till they run out of, like, survival buckets. And
you don't understand, dude. Pyramid. The aperture at the top of the pyramid permits in the primordial light, and you don't need food.
And it also turns into a giant Tesla coil, like in that one mission in Red Alert 2.
One human soul per hour, so yeah. You can't fit a lot of people in there.
You know how you charge the human soul is you aim your butthole.
Yeah, bro, like Doritos. Cool Ranch Doritos.
Well, the beam of light hits your butthole and it recharges your...
You're telling me that I have to boof the primordial light? All right, by the way, that's going to be the title of this episode, by the way. The title of this episode is Boofing the Primordial Light.
Now, Ryan, don't lecture me on perineum energy absorption. I know all about it. The big issue with the Memphis Bass Pro Pyramid.
I like light. I enjoy a light. That's my Kavanaugh impersonation. Sir, is it true you've been boofing the primordial light? I don't know if you could do that if you're going to be a Supreme Court justice. I like light. What's the matter with light? Starts crying.
Me, Squiggy.
I think him coming to tears in his interview is immediately disqualifying as a Supreme Court justice. If you can't hold your shit together in an interview, how can you be a Supreme Court justice?
Yeah. Ask Justice Beers. Like I don't
Justice Beers.
But my point I wanted to make about why the Memphis Pyramid, before we move on, is not that powerful, is because decades of Republican administration of Tennessee have, you know, cut back on public utilities, and they have not constructed enough pylons to properly use the Memphis Pyramid.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
They have not been able to construct the proper infrastructure to fight back against the North. They're going to get Zerg rushed.
This is why you got to keep a guy like Steve around, because you're always going to forget about the pylons.
Over.
You know, how are you going to forget about pylons? You know, you think you got your fucking battle plans worked out, and then done.
So anyway. Here's the thing. You can four-pool with the Zerg. The problem is you can't four-gate with the Protoss. You actually have to make your initial probe right off rip, whereas with if you're the Zerg, those three initial larvae can just wait for your pool to be spawned in. The problem with the Protoss is everything is so fucking expensive. You have to have the gateway and the pylon, but still, the Zealot's $100. One Zealot could take on really three if you know how to, you know, micro
of course.
Around.
Yeah, you got a micro.
I'm off my soapbox now.
Speaking of people who didn't have micro, when we last picked off, I think Andrew Jackson was boofing the Primordial Light.
So a few weeks after his inauguration, Jackson started looking into how he could replace the Second Bank of the United States. The bank had been chartered by President Madison in 1816 to restore the United States economy after the War of 1812. Monroe had appointed Nicholas Biddle as the bank's executive.
War of 1812, quick review. What was that over?
The War of 1812 was essentially over Great Britain impressing American sailors, not really respecting American rights. It was essentially like the American Revolution 2.0. The war to essentially like solidify that, yes, you can't keep pushing us around.
Got it.
The bank was a repository for the country's public money, which also serviced the national debt. It was formed as a for-profit entity that looked after the concerns of its shareholders. In 1828, the country was prosperous and the currency was stable, but Jackson saw the bank as a fourth branch of the government run by an elite, what he called quote-unquote money power, that sought to control the labor and earnings of the quote-unquote real people who depend on their own efforts to succeed. This ironically includes the planters, farmers, mechanics, and laborers, and I say ironically because planter is a code word for like a slave owner.
So not the actual people
code
who
word.
Do the planting.
What do you mean a code word?
Well, they dog like
no,
like,
I'm saying,
like sort of like
who
a dog
would
whistle.
Say that, though,
well, like the people who owned slaves would describe themselves as planters. Like Thomas Jefferson would say he was a planter.
Okay. Okay.
Like he wouldn't say he's a farmer because a farmer actually works the land himself.
Right.
The people that he called the money power, would that be like, in his words, money power with like three parentheses around it?
Yes. It's money power like max power.
The money power question.
Yeah.
Is that what it means by money power? The people that run the bank, the quote-unquote fourth branch of government.
He's got the name you'd like to touch.
Like, basically, was Jackson an anti-Semite?
Was he?
I don't think he was an anti-Semite, but I don't think there were enough Semites to be anti enough in America at the time.
I mean, but, like, you know, the kind of people that are as like, openly racist as he was, I mean, it's just really a hop, skip, and a jump, bro. I mean, just introduce him to a small group of people who aren't like him, he's going to hate him in no time.
Not to say that I'm defending him, but that's part of the problem with criticism of banking, is that because it's been so tied to anti-Semitism and, like, poisoned by it, that you can't actually have legitimate criticism of, like, banking institutions, because it can be construed as being, like, anti-Semitic.
Yeah, that's fucked up.
Yeah, but it's only construed as anti-Semitic if you're an idiot, if you have legitimate complaints and concerns with the bank
itself. But anti-Semitism is one of those things where even if you get, like, whiff that, kind of like similar to Pete Rose, even if you get the whiff of impropriety there, like, a whole group of people are completely against you at that point. You can never defend yourself.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Kind of watching it go on right now. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous.
But one of the things that should be noted as well is that Andrew Jackson's own bankruptcy in 1804, which we talked about, due to his doing land speculation on credit, you know, that he was like, you know, TikTok finance guy, had biased him against paper money and toward a policy favorable to hard money.
Hey, y'all, Andrew Jackson here. Like, comment, and subscribe.
Because you have to remember during this period, like, the Andrew U.S. Jackson has a national was like currency.
Those videos that come on between YouTube videos, if you don't have an ad blocker, where it's just like, did you know you can get Florida solar for free? That's right. I said absolutely free. All you've got to do is get on your fucking knees and pray.
Andrew Jackson is promoting the Chase free money like hack.
Yeah.
or the one that I saw where it's like you just set up QuickBooks, you just make a bunch of fake orders for your company that you just made, and then you just start buying, like, start getting loans from banks based off these like completely fake orders you made in QuickBooks that are definitely reported to the government. Yeah.
It's like some kind of like a pseudo brushing scam almost.
He would have absolutely like one of those like really shitty techno outros too for his YouTube videos.
He'd be one of those guys that's like day trading, but the way he day trades is he has like an Excel sheet that has like a script set up.
I mean, if you're not using Microsoft Excel when you're day trading, are you day trading? You know?
Oh,
you have to ask yourself this question.
In his first address, his first annual address in December of 1829, Jackson openly challenged the bank by questioning its constitutionality and the soundness of its money. Jackson's supporters further alleged that it gave preferential loans to speculators and merchants over artisans and farmers, that it used its money to bribe congressmen and the press, and that it had ties with foreign creditors. Biddle responded to Jackson's challenge in early 1830 by using the bank's vast financial holding to ensure the bank's reputation, and his supporters argued that the bank was the key to prosperity and stable commerce. By the time of the 1832 election, Biddle had spent over $250,000, the equivalent of $7,874,200 in today's money, in printing pamphlets, lobbying for pro-bank legislation, hiring agents, and giving loans to editors and congressmen, which I know that $7 million sounds big, but even by today's standards, that's pretty, like, Bush League.
Dude, I was about to say, like, at this point, like, the numbers you're saying just don't mean anything anymore. It's just like, dude, like, that much money, it doesn't seem like that's a lot of fucking money. You know what I mean? $7 million is a lot of fucking money at this point. It's just like, numbers on a piece of paper, you know?
On the surface, both of their positions did not appear irreconcilable. Jackson seemed open to keeping the bank if it could include some degree of federal oversight, limit its real estate holdings, and have its property subject to taxation by the state. Many of Jackson's cabinet members thought a compromise was possible, and in 1831, Treasury Secretary Lewis McLean told Biddle that Jackson was open to chartering a modified version of the bank, but Biddle did not consult Jackson directly. Privately, Jackson expressed opposition to the bank. Publicly, he announced that he would leave the decision concerning the bank in the hands of the people.
Oh, another Biddle one of these wishy-washy motherfuckers. You guys decide.
Biddle was finally convinced to take open action by Henry Clay, who had decided to run for president against Jackson in the 1832 election. Biddle would agree to seek renewal of the charter 2 years earlier than scheduled. Clay argued that Jackson was in a bind. If he vetoed the charter, he would lose the votes of his pro-bank constituents in Pennsylvania, but if he signed the charter, he would lose his anti-bank constituents. After the recharter bill was passed, Jackson vetoed it on July 10th, 1832, arguing that the country should not surrender the will of the majority to the desires of the wealthy.
I agree.
He's saying all the right things, right?
Well, but it's also the point that he says, like, I'm going to leave it to the people to decide. And representatives are the chosen representatives of the people. And they decided, yes, we're going to do that. And then he vetoes it. So while he is like, I would agree with him on that. It's just sort of hypocritical on his part to say, like, we're going to let the people decide this. And then when the legislature, which is arguably the voice of the people, I don't fully believe that in the American system. But they decide it's the voice of a small number
of people who own large corporations. That's what it is.
But they decide, like, yes, we're going to do this, which is the only way at this point that can be decided by the people. And he says, like, no, no, we're not going to do that.
You know, and a crowd forms in New York yesterday that makes January 6th look like a local, like, fire station punk show. And nobody's going to talk about it tomorrow on the news.
There was a big one here in Orlando.
There was, dude. There were thousands
all over the country.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah.
100,000 people were in Chicago. 100,000.
Pretty sure Gainesville did some, too.
100,000 people could literally fall over on the January 6th crowd, just, like, decide to fall over, and they would win the fight. That's how many people that is.
Yeah, Steve, but how many of them are underwater on a water ski dealership?
How many of them are underwater on a Ford F-150 Lightning Raptor Superback 9000 Turbo XL?
That's not fair, Steve.
F-350.
NASCAR edition.
It's called the Chevy Suburban High Country Z28 4x4.
Oh, you were much better than me. That sounded accurate. That sounds like a real model. Like, if it I go is. On car gurus and ask for that shit.
That's Chevy's, like, top-of-the-line extreme model, much like the Ford King Ranch.
Yeah, I've seen the King Ranch. My neighbor had one for a while there. But my neighbor has a farm. So
he actually did pick up shit with
him. Yeah, exactly. I have no problem with people like that. Or, like, my father-in-law is so big, he can't get into normal cars. Like, he just can't into them easily, so he has a truck. I get it.
There was a local rancher from where I'm from, and he used to, like, he's, like, from one of, like, the oldest, like, ranching families in the area, which, for people who don't know, that's, like, one of Florida's original things is ranching. And
you sure it wasn't planting?
But he would herd cattle with a Cadillac, and this is, like, in the 80s. Awesome. So like a land boat, like, Cadillac.
Amazing.
Fucking awesome.
And he would like crack the axles on him, which wasn't a big deal to him because he was so wealthy. But I just love that anecdote of the guy. He would, like, it's like, yeah, I used to drive Cadillacs, and he would even, like, herd his cattle with him, just driving through the field.
Working. Tell me he, like, tied, like, bullhorns to the front.
I wish. I hope so.
I don't know why that.
And tell me it was a bright,
head.
Like, bright, fucking pink Cadillac. Like, what's the door to door, the Avon people, bright pink with the
Mary Kay
on the front,
or the Mary Kay, the Mary Kay car, yeah. The one that's on the cover of what's it called? It's that other podcast with the JD Vance.
The Trillbillies.
Yeah, the Trillbillies, yeah. Pretty sure that's a Mary Kay car, right? The woman that's on the cover of their podcast?
What's, I forget what her name is, but she's, like, a very, like, notable, like, wealthy woman from the region.
Oh, okay.
The 1832 presidential election demonstrated the rapid development of political parties during Jackson's presidency. The Democratic Party's first national convention held in Baltimore nominated Jackson's choice for vice president, Martin Van Buren.
Oh, the Van Buren national boys.
Yeah. They're mean as hell, Jerry. the National Republican Party, which had held its first convention in Baltimore early in December of 1831, nominated Clay, now a senator from Kentucky, and John Sargent of Pennsylvania.
John Sargent's former Van B boy. Oh, yeah? Show us the sign.
An anti-Masonic party with a platform built around opposition to Freemasonry supported neither Jackson nor Clay, but both were who were Masons. They nominated William Wirt of Maryland and Amos Elmaker of Pennsylvania. In addition to the votes Jackson would lose because of the bank veto, Clay hoped that Jackson's Indian Removal Act would alienate voters in the East. But Jackson's losses were offset by the act's popularity in the West and Southwest. Clay had also...
Wait. So you're going to tell me that the West and the Southwest had more people than the East?
Just that the losses were offset. Those vote losses were offset.
Because the Electoral College, like...
Okay, never mind.
That he's going to get votes. And then also the populations were exploding out West.
Gotcha. For some reason, I was thinking about the Electoral College.
Like people are flooding to the West to a degree that, like, when they talk about, like, how things would break down and, like, they would come into conflict with, like, a conflict with Native Americans, it was because so many people are, like squatting on land in the West that, like, they're invariably coming into conflict with, like, the Native peoples that live there.
It's like the OG white flight before the 1950s and 60s.
Mm-hmm. Because the reasoning is that it's like free land.
Yeah.
It's free real estate.
Yeah, definitely white people shit just going stealing land. Nobody lives here. Those guys over there in those huts? No.
I never saw them here. They didn't even build a house. Why? How could they live
here? This is mine. Listen to me. Their whole fucking culture is based on mobility. Get the fuck out of here. This is mine.
Well, it's ironic you say that because, like, the Creek, the Cherokee, the Choctaw, like, they own, like, plantation houses. Like, you can go plantation in Georgia. I think it's outside Macon. And it is like a Southern style plantation, and it was owned by a Cherokee Indian who was forced to remove.
I'd be so pissed.
Like, they owned slaves. They had essentially, like, especially the Cherokee, they had become so like Americanized that the principal chief of the Cherokee tribe believed in the United States Constitution more than the people who were actually elected American officials.
That's fucking insane.
Cray cray.
Chief Cray. You're talking about my friend Crazy. Or you're talking about my brother Crazy Talk.
How?
From that Simpsons episode at the casino.
Yeah. No, I'm right there with you. Yeah.
Listen, great episode, honestly.
Yeah.
Clay had also expected that Jackson would lose votes because of his stand on internal improvements. Jackson had vetoed the Maysville Road Bill, which funded the upgrade of a section of the national road in Clay's state of Kentucky. Jackson argued it was unconstitutional to fund internal improvements using national funds for local projects. Clay's strategy, though, would ultimately fail. Jackson was able to mobilize the Democratic Party's strong political networks. The Northeast supported Jackson because of his favor in maintaining a stiff tariff. The West supported him because of the Indian Removal Act, which reduced the number of Native Americans in the region and made more public land available to them. The only exception was South Carolina, which passed the Ordinance of Nullification during the election month and refused to support any party by giving its votes to the future governor of Virginia, John B. Floyd. The South supported Jackson for implementing the Indian Removal Act, as well as for his willingness to compromise by signing the Tariff of 1832.
So he just basically appealed to all the worst aspects of
yes area. And in classical American fashion, that went to an electoral landslide, receiving 55% of the popular vote and 219 electoral votes.
Jesus fucking Christ, this dude is insane. I love it. It's like history has repeated itself a mere what, almost 200 years later, just shy of 200 years later.
The only difference is America at this point is like a backwater.
Let me stop you. What's the fucking difference?
well, for us today, obviously, there's not much of a difference. But if you think in like a global scale, like the United States is not the premier nation in the world. Right. It does not control world finances. It is not in charge of all these other things. Like, it is just a side player to everything. It would be like us going inside baseball on the politics of like Rwanda.
That'd be fucking hilarious, honestly, though.
But oh,
man, you guys but nowadays, like that topic? I'm gonna have to rewrite my essay. Fuck. Now I'll never get published in the New Yorker.
But nowadays, you know, it's just like, you know, they're just torching like essentially the most powerful country that's ever existed in the world.
Yeah,
just unreal.
Jackson saw his victory as a mandate to continue his war on the bank's control over the national economy. In 1833, Jackson signed an executive order ending the deposit of treasury receipts in the bank. When Secretary of the Treasury McLean refused to execute the order, Jackson replaced him with William J. Duane, who also refused.
Jackson refused to execute the order. Replaced him with Dwayne the Rock Johnson.
Why would Dwayne refuse? Like, didn't he vet Dwayne first? Like, why would you replace a guy who won't do what you want with a guy who won't do what you want? That's fucking stupid.
I mean, that's a good question.
That's the government, though, bro. That is how
the government works. Did he nope him? No, I mean, that's too convenient. I agree with you, Ryan, but that's too convenient. There's got to be something going on there.
I think it was a matter where he thought, like, yeah, this will be the guy, and then he did, like, consult with him beforehand.
Okay. Huh.
It's like, I feel like if that happened today with Trump, it would probably be the same. But he would appoint somebody, and he's like, yeah, you're gonna destroy the Department of Energy. And they're like,
that's what happened his entire first term. His entire first term was him appointing people who, while I didn't agree with their politics and choices, were not failures, like, by any stretch of the imagination. They're pretty, like, accomplished individuals, and then they're fired.
It was like Rick Perry, where he was like, I'm gonna destroy the Department of Energy.
He's not in the group I'm talking about, but
yeah, I know. But I'm just giving an example where he was purposely put in there to destroy the Department of Energy, and the second he got in and he actually saw what the Department of Energy did, he, by his own admission, realized that they actually do an important job and that he wasn't going to destroy the agency.
Oh, you fucking just had to sit there to realize it did an important job. That's fine. Okay. All right.
Say, man, we can't destroy this department. They're going to come. How am I going to put the lights on at N-Word Ranch?
Now,
Rick Perry, well known for having a giant rock on his ranch that had the N-Word on it.
Insane. Now a lot of Northerners are going to disagree with this, but it is a Southern tradition that we have a rock that states the N-word.
N-word ranch.
That's fucking insane.
Jackson then appointed Roger B. Taney as acting secretary, who implemented his policy. With the loss of the federal deposits, the bank had to contract its credit. Biddle used his contraction to create an economic downturn in an attempt to get Jackson to compromise. Biddle wrote, "Nothing but the evidence of suffering abroad will produce any effect in Congress." The attempt did not succeed. The economy recovered, and Biddle was blamed for the recession.
Get the fuck out of here, nerd.
Jackson's actions led those who disagreed with him to form the Whig Party. They claimed to oppose Jackson's expansion of executive power, calling him King Andrew I, and naming their party after the English Whigs, who opposed the British monarchy in the 17th century.
Well, Steve and I have kind of like a side thing going where I keep messaging him every week and asking him to, you know, can this be the week we talk about the Whig Party? And he says no every single time. And I stopped arguing, but I'm glad he just brought it up, like, organically. I feel so much better about life now.
In March of 1834, the Senate censured Jackson for inappropriately taking authority for the Treasury Department when it was the responsibility of Congress, and refused to confirm Taney's appointment as Secretary of the Treasury. In April, however, the House declared that the bank should not be rechartered, and by July of 1836, the bank no longer held any federal deposits.
Aw, man.
Jackson defunct at that point.
Yeah, as like a government entity. It still had some private accounts, but the bank would eventually, you know, go away.
Gotcha.
Jackson had federal funds deposited into state banks friendly to the administration's policies, which critics called pet banks. The number of these state banks more than doubled during Jackson's administration, and investment patterns changed. The bank, which had been the federal government's fiscal agent, invested heavily in trade and financed interregional and international trade. State banks were more responsive to state governments and invested heavily in land development, land speculation, and state public works projects. In spite of the efforts of Taney's successor, Levi Woodbury, to control them, the pet banks expanded their loans, hoping to create a speculative boom in the final years of Jackson's administration. In January of 1835, Jackson paid off the national debt, which was the only time in U.S. history that it had been accomplished. It was paid down through tariff revenues, carefully managing federal funding of internal improvements like roads and canals, and the sale of public lands. Between 1834 and 1836, the government had an unprecedented spike. The sale of public lands.
You said tariff revenues.
Yes. And I'm going to get to why that's a little different what the current administration thinks.
Well, obviously it's different, but I was hoping you would do that, so that's good. Okay, cool. I'll wait. And so between will all 1834, you'll fucking wait.
Be patient.
So between 1834 and 1836, The government had an unprecedented spike in land sales. At its peak in 1836, the profits from land sales were 8 to 12 times higher than a typical year. So what this essentially is that the United States government is stealing land from Native Americans. Native American tribes hold land that they are sovereign nations under the Constitution. They are designated sovereign nations by the executive branch of the government, which makes the treaties, and the Senate ratifies them. And essentially what happens
These Native... Did they really do that?
Yes. And yes. These Native American tribes are forced into signing away their lands increasingly, and especially under Jackson with the Indian Removal Act, which is accomplished after his administration, is that they're essentially told that this is the new treaty, you need to sign it. And if they don't sign it, like, bad things are going to happen. So they're selling their land to the United
States. Duress.
So they're signing
away. By the way, I didn't need both to answer my rhetorical question. me sound like a fucking idiot. Like, I don't know that.
Well, the thing is, too, Steve, is that the majority of these treaties are illegal. They're not being signed by the actual leaders of these tribal nations. They're being signed by members. It would be like if somebody rolled up to your house and they said, I want to buy all the public land in Orange County, and I need you to sign off on this for me.
And then they said, if you don't sign it, I'm going to kill your whole family, basically.
Well, no, but it's the fact that even if they did threaten you with that, you have no legal authority to sell that land. Like the Treaty of New Echota, which sells away Cherokee land to the United States government and forces them to go to Oklahoma, that treaty was signed by people who were not part of the government of the Cherokee Nation. They were just random prominent members of the Cherokee Nation who were forced to sign this treaty.
So it was like the fake Donovan McNabb like guy on It's Always Sunny.
Yeah. And it's like,
hey, here's the question. If they knock on my door and say, here, Ryan, sign this, and you're basically selling us all the public land in Orange County. Are they paying me? Because my brother,
they are giving you
cash right now. I'm gonna sign whatever you want. Have it, dickhead.
If it's cash,
let's go.
Well, in the case of the Cherokee, Chief John Ross, who was the principal chief of the Cherokee at that time, when he went to negotiate, the Cherokee had to pay for all of their travel and all the stuff to negotiate the treaty. Whereas the signers of the Treaty of New Echota, all their stuff was paid for by the government because they were treated as the legitimate signers of the treaty, even though they were not the legitimate representatives.
Okay.
But essentially, the United States government is buying the land of Native Americans for pennies on the dollar in modern day terms. And then they're selling it for massive profits. They would buy the land, say, for a dollar, and they would sell it for $10 an acre.
Okay.
So the thing is that when he's solving the national debt, I think when people like Trump and like his other like fucking incels and gooners or whatever, when they look at that and they see like, oh, tariff revenues. No, the reality is that they're stealing land from Native Americans for nothing and they're selling it for massive profits. And that's what's destroying the national debt.
So they're fucking scalping. This country was built on the back of scalpers.
So yes, they're legally buying the lands of the Native Americans for pennies on the dollar, and then they're selling it for massive profits, and that's how they're getting rid of the national debt.
Incredible.
And that makes them smart, by the way. Not they're not doing a bad thing.
That makes them 4D chess playing good businessmen.
Oh my God.
So you know, when I put a gun to your head and I ask for your wallet, and then when you don't give it to me, I pistol whip you, and then you give me the wallet, that makes me very smart.
I'm a smart man. I'm one of the smart guys.
But usually during this time period, when they talk about public lands, these public lands are most definitely the lands of Native American tribes that inhabited the regions.
So not actually like a fucking Yellowstone. It's like Yellowstone's house.
Well, the thing too with like Yellowstone is that in the real story of like the national park is that Native Americans lived on that land and they were essentially forced off of it to make it a national park.
No, don't ruin Yellowstone for me.
Yeah, that there were actually Native Americans that lived on the land, and they were told, you can't live here anymore. You need to move. God
damn it, Steve.
Because it all goes into this thing, is that that's what this country is built upon, because when they bought the Louisiana Purchase,
Oh, I know what all this country's built on, trust me.
Well, yeah, other than slavery. But the white people who lived in those territories, they were allowed to become citizens. But Native Americans, by the Constitution, could not become citizens until 1924.
That's so fucked.
That they were non-citizens. So even during the period where they have the residential schools in the late 1800s, and they're quote-unquote making them proper Americans, they are incapable of becoming Americans. They legally cannot become United States citizens.
Hmm. Profoundly fucked.
But between 1834 and 1836, when they're selling this land, at this peak of these land sales, they were 8 to 12 times higher than the previous year, which is mostly due to things like the Indian Removal Act and also removal in the old Midwest, which is the area of like Ohio and regions like that. So during Jackson's presidency, 63 million acres of public land about the size of the state of Oklahoma was sold, ironically, because that's where most of the people who own that land would be going. After Jackson's term expired in 1837, a Democrat majority Senate expunged Jackson's censure.
Can a Democrat majority Senate expunge my record? Can I write to the Senate and be like, I need my record expunged?
Yeah, you just have to become a right wing grifter. That's the
There was a joke on Blue Sky that was making fun of the G.I. Joe collecting community. Mm-hmm. And it was like the G.I. Joe community and so much of the Transformer community is the same right now on the one major hub of it. And it's like I don't know how I feel about these tariffs, but he did pardon me.
Oh my god.
Despite the economic boom following Jackson's victory in the Bank War, land speculation in the West caused the Panic of 1837. Jackson's transfer of federal money to state banks in 1833 caused Western banks to relax their lending standards. The Indian Removal Act made large amounts of former Native American land available for purchase and speculation, like I mentioned. Two of Jackson's acts in 1836 contributed to the panic. One was the specie circular, which mandated Western lands only to be purchased by money backed by specie. Specie is like gold, silver, okay. Like hard currency.
Okay.
Because during this time period, when people talk about hard currency, they mean like literal hard currency. They don't mean paper currency. Because paper currency at this point is because we don't have like an actual national currency. It's like wildly affected by like speculation and the strength of the bank that you're getting it from. It's essentially a promissory note from a specific bank. The act was intended to stabilize the economy by reducing speculation on credit, but it caused a drain of gold and silver from the eastern banks to the western banks to address the needs of financing these land transactions. The other was the Deposit and Distribution Act, which transferred federal money from eastern to western state banks. Together, they left eastern banks unable to pay specie to the British when they recalled their loans to address their economic problems in international trade. The panic drove the U.S. economy into a depression that lasted until 1841. So again, another thing we should probably expect to be in a recession until for the next 4 years.
Oh,
or yeah. Depression.
Thanks, buddy.
Oh, it's coming. Unless he completely shifts course tomorrow, which is, no. It's not an economic policy, by the way. Like, I've read several articles, like, basically just make a lot of sense. Like, don't think of it as an economic policy. And then it makes sense.
It's devoid of any economic thought.
Yeah, it's the whole point is to destroy the system.
On May 6, 1833, Robert B. Randolph struck Jackson in the face with his hand because Jackson had ordered Randolph's dismissal from the Navy for embezzlement.
Nice.
Jackson declined to press charges. While Jackson was leaving the United States Capitol on January 30, 1835, Richard Lawrence, an unemployed house painter from England, aimed a pistol at him, which misfired. Lawrence pulled out a second pistol, which also misfired.
Oh my
Jackson
god,
this attacked. Guy is
so much like Trump, it's not even funny. I can't with this fucking shit. I fucking can't.
Jackson attacked Lawrence with his cane until others intervened to restrain Lawrence, who was later found not guilty by reason of insanity and institutionalized.
Andrew the Don Jackson. Like, how... Continue. I'm just mad.
This was the first attempt to assassinate a sitting president in U.S. history. By the 1830s, abolitionism in the United States was becoming a major reform movement, when often targeted by pro-slavery violence. Federal troops were used to crush Nat Turner's slave rebellion in 1831, though Jackson ordered them withdrawn immediately afterwards, despite the petition of local citizens for them to remain. Jackson considered the issue of slavery divisive to the nation and to the delicate alliances of the Democratic Party. Jackson's view was challenged when the American Anti-Slavery Society agitated for abolition by sending anti-slavery tracts through the postal system into the South in 1835. Jackson condemned the abolitionists as monsters and said they should die, arguing that their anti-slavery activism would encourage sectionalism and destroy the Union.
Jesus Christ, that's a little much, bro.
The tracts provoked riots in Charleston, and pro-slavery Southerners demanded that the Postal Service ban the distribution of the materials. Jackson responded by directing the anti-slavery tracts should be sent only to subscribers whose names could be made publicly known, exposing them to reprisal. That December, Jackson called on Congress to prohibit the circulation through the South of quote-unquote incendiary publications intended to instigate the slaves to insurrection.
So imagine riots breaking out over chick tracks. Fucking insane.
Well, this is also kind of like the discourse around like anti-Israel stuff. Is that there are people who want to make it like criminal for you to like publicly post that you don't agree with like Israel's policies.
And those people should be fired into the sun.
So like you said, as much as things change, like the song remains the same.
Like I really, really don't like free speech as it exists in this country, but I will defend your right to say shit.
What do you mean?
I don't like the way free speech exists in this country, where the Supreme Court, if it took it all the way to the top, the Supreme Court would just be the ultimate arbitrator of what is protected speech and what is not. Right? I'm not talking about the whole, like, oh, you get canceled on the internet. That's what I'm not talking. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about that there are ultimately six people that will ultimately decide what free speech is. And that doesn't really sit right with me. Like, honestly, it should be more of a, unless it is a direct harm to somebody. Say whatever the fuck you want to say, man.
That's kind of exactly how it is right now. I mean, the only people that end up getting picked up so far, unfortunately, are, well, American citizens who have every right to be here.
that's so fucked.
Oh, man. It's absolutely ridiculous. But it wasn't It wasn't like that before this administration. They weren't picking up people who just said shit like that they didn't agree with and then sent them to El Salvador. That is fucking new.
Yeah.
And that is, well, you know, Steve, that might be the most egregious thing they're doing right now, which is just,
well, they're also sending away like dangerous people, you know, of gang tattoos, like a
or that
like
woman puzzle, who embezzled like money piece, 40 years ago.
A puzzle piece ribbon, you know, for autism, which in the gang movement means that you've like that you've killed and raped a woman, so...
Yeah, exactly.
Jesus Christ.
It's completely fucking bullshit. It's just completely made up so far.
I find it funny, too, that they're going on about tattoos when Trump has those, like, really awful, like just talentless, like, rappers who have all those terrible, like, face tattoos.
I got two words. I got two words for you, bro.
Horatio Blow or whatever the fuck the name is.
I got two words for you, bro. PDX, that's all I got. Two words for you. Some of the dumbest, most tasteless bullshit tattoos.
He has an infidel tattoo.
Yeah. He is literally he is Arrested Development writ large. Like, just a complete moron who has no business being in his position.
You know what the response to that is, Steve?
Huh?
It's fist emoji, explosion emoji, American flag emoji.
I know. It's absolutely ridiculous. The idea that anyone would support that.
The Jackson administration successfully negotiated a trade agreement with Siam, the first Asian nation to form a trade agreement with the U.S. The administration also made trade agreements with Great Britain, Spain, Russia, and the Ottoman Empire.
Siam, is it still...
Does this it's still, Thailand.
Yeah, it's Thailand, right? Yeah.
I was about to say, though, did they change that in Risk, or is Risk still have it as Siam? Because I used to love Siam as a country in Risk.
It became Thailand in like the 20s, I think.
Yeah.
It was the king before the previous king. Because the previous king
in Risk in the game.
It was called Siam. But in real life, like Iran, like it was called Persia, and then they changed the name.
Yeah. Okay.
Got it.
In the first annual message to Congress, Jackson addressed the issues of spoliation claims, demands of compensation for the capture of American ships and the sailors by foreign nations during the Napoleonic Wars.
What are they called? I'm not trying to make you repeat a hard word, but what was it?
Spoliation claims.
Spoliation?
Spoilation.
S-P-O-L-I-A-T-I-O-N.
Huh. Okay. I've never heard that before. I don't know.
But using a combination of bluster and tact, he successfully settled these claims with Denmark, Portugal, and Spain, but he had difficulty collecting spoliation claims from France, which was unwilling to pay an indemnity agreed to in an earlier treaty.
The seizure of neutral vessels at sea by a belligerent power in a time of war. Huh.
Yes, which is essentially what the War of 1812 was over.
Wow.
Because it mostly focused on Great Britain, even though France was doing the same, because Great Britain was doing it more because they were picking up English-speaking sailors. Because it's a lot easier to make someone who speaks English like work on your ship than to make them work on a French ship where everybody speaks French.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Jackson asked Congress in 1834 to authorize reprisals against French property if the country failed to make payment, as well as to arm for defense. In response, France put its Caribbean fleet on wartime footing. Both sides wanted to avoid conflict, but the French wanted an apology for Jackson's belligerence. In his 1835 annual message to Congress, Jackson asserted that he refused to apologize, but he stated that he did not intend to, quote-unquote, menace or insult the government of France. The French, though, were assuaged by this and agreed to pay $5 million, the equivalent of $152,403,200 in today's money, to settle the claims.
The French
war. Do you see what I mean about the numbers just at a certain point not making sense? It's just that kind of money is just unfathomable to the average person.
Would you say the French were what of this?
That they were assuaged, assuaged. You know, that they were assuaged. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They were Julian Assanged.
Yeah. No, I just didn't understand the word. I'm not busting chops. I just couldn't.
They brought in Pamela Anderson, and they were fine with
Pamela Anderson or Pamela Anderson Lee. I mean, it matters. You know, because one of them has like the clap and like turbo chlamydia and.
Well, I'll just say this: she doesn't wear makeup anymore, and she still looks good.
She's a genuinely beautiful woman. I don't understand. Yeah. Like, you know, I would never shit on her for that. You know,
she did a Criterion Closet episode recently. I was like, oh, I wonder what she's up to. And she had been in a movie recently,
yeah,
which is about like an old like showgirl,
a Lifetime original.
Yeah. Beaten by a rod.
Pam's back. It's Christmas. Meredith Baxter Burney gets beaten with a rod. Look at that.
Since the early 1820s, large numbers of Americans have been immigrating to Texas, a territory of the newly independent nation of Mexico. As early as 1824, Jackson had supported acquiring the region for the United States. In 1829, he attempted to purchase Mexico, but did not want to, attempted to purchase Texas, but Mexico did not want to sell. By the 1830s, there were twice as many settlers from the United States as from Mexico, leading to tensions with the Mexican government that started the Texas Revolution. During the conflict, Jackson covertly allowed settlers to obtain weapons and money from the United States.
Oh, boy, like, is he selling it to them?
Well, yeah, they're just, like, allowing people to, like, go over the border and sell them guns. Like, no one's stopping, like, you know, like today, if you like, or like, I'm going to sell guns to like whatever, like the authorities are like, you can't do that.
Right.
So he's just like, he's like, yeah, you can go sell them guns. They defeated the Mexican military in April of 1836 and declared the region an independent country, the Republic of Texas. The new republic asked Jackson to annex it. Although Jackson wanted to do so, he was hesitant because he was unsure it could maintain independence from Mexico. He was also concerned because Texas had legalized slavery, which was an issue that could divide the Democrats during the 1836 election. Jackson would recognize the Republic of Texas on the last day of his presidency, March 3, 1837. During his presidency, Jackson appointed six justices to the Supreme Court. Most of them were not notable. Jackson nominated Roger B. Taney in January of 1835 to the court in reward for his services, but the nomination failed to win Senate approval.
Imagine, bro, imagine the greatest part of this guy's presidency is the fact that he didn't fuck the Supreme Court. Like, when, purposely.
When Chief Justice Marshall died in 1835, Jackson again nominated Taney for Chief Justice. He was confirmed by the new Senate, serving as Chief Justice until 1864. He was regarded with respect during his career on the bench, but he is most remembered for his widely condemned decision in Dred Scott versus Sanford.
Never mind.
which was the decision that essentially said that slavery was legal.
Oh, God, never mind.
On the last day of his presidency, Jackson signed the Judiciary Act of 1837, which created two new Supreme Court seats.
We've been doing it this whole time.
And reorganized the federal circuit courts.
They just wanted it like written down, make sure that it was like totally cool, like enshrined in law.
Nah, that's what I'm saying.
Two new states were admitted into the Union during his presidency: Arkansas on June 15th, 1836, and Michigan on January 26th, 1837.
Mid, both admissions to the Union. Mid.
Jeez.
I mean, he cursed us with the Upers.
He cursed us with fucking the whole goddamn Sanders family, the Huckabee Sanders family.
This guy has no morals, no shame, just boofing the primordial light, cursing us with the Ubers. I mean, what's
Michigan
next?
Michigan sports?
Yeah, Michigan sports, boofing the primordial light and cursing us with the Ubers. What are you doing?
Both states increased Democratic power in Congress and helped Van Buren win the presidency in 1836, as new states tended to support the party that had done the most to admit them. Jackson's presidency ended on March 4th, 1837. He left Washington, D.C. 3 days later, retiring to the Hermitage in Nashville, where he remained influential in national and state politics. To reduce the inflation caused by the Panic of 1837, Jackson supported an independent treasury system that would restrict government from printing money and require it to hold its money in silver and gold. During the 1840 election, Jackson campaigned for Van Buren in Tennessee, but Van Buren had become unpopular during the continuing Depression. The Whig Party nominee, William Henry Harrison, won the election using a campaign style similar to that of the Democrats. Van Buren was depicted as an uncaring aristocrat, while Harrison's war record was glorified and he was portrayed as a man of the people.
Just the two names, right? You got a William Henry Harrison versus a Martin Van Buren. Look, just on the strength of the name, I know who I'm voting for, right? But if you put yourself in the shoes of somebody from, like, the 1800s, dude, Van Buren is an immediate, this is a rich prick. I'm not voting for this fucking asshole. No. William Henry Harrison,
he sounds
like a salt of the earth kind
William
of guy.
William Henry Harrison's the guy that died like a week into his term, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, he's related because he's related to the Harrisons on Pawn Stars, I think.
That sucks. Would he have a heart attack?
Oh, you're president? Sorry, best I can do is a week.
Did he have a heart attack or a stroke?
Essentially what happened was that when he did his inauguration, it was raining.
He tried to boost the primordial light.
Yeah, he tried to boost the primordial light, and he went up like tissue paper because he was found wanting.
Super fucking flammable soul.
But no, during his inauguration, it was raining, and obviously at that time of the year, he got pneumonia and died.
Oh man, that fucking sucks. If you got pneumonia, and died in a week. Oh my god.
He had the shortest term in U.S. history. I think he died in under 30 days. It wasn't a week.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's the fastest I think I've ever heard of pneumonia killing somebody. Jesus Christ.
He was inaugurated on March 4th, and then he died on April
4th. Dude, I've literally never heard of Benjamin Harrison, the president.
Or William Henry Harrison.
So maybe I was wrong. Maybe we should have...
Benjamin Harrison.
The people should have elected Martin.
No, he's the youngest child of Benjamin Harrison.
I know, I'm just saying, I've never heard of Benjamin Harrison. He was the 23rd president. Never heard of him.
No, William, is like nephew, I think, isn't he?
I'm not sure. He was preceded by Grover Cleveland and succeeded by Grover Cleveland. This guy's bookended by Grover Cleveland. I've never heard of him before. Is this like some kind of
He was a grandson of William Henry Harrison.
I don't remember a Benjamin Harrison as president.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
As a kid, they made us memorize all the presidents.
Is this made up?
He was president from 1889 to 1893.
Is this like a massive Wikipedia edit conspiracy? This is not a real man.
So no, I just think I long for people who live during a term of a president no one can remember.
Yeah, because politics is supposed to be like that. You know, it's supposed to be fucking boring.
Somebody just minds the shop for... Yeah. I just want somebody who binds the shop for 4 years and like, I don't lose my shirt.
The idea that we're like, that we have a president who's doing things based off of like ratings amongst his followers is just like asinine.
I don't want C-SPAN to be exciting television.
No.
Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, no. That shit is supposed to be boring. It's shit that your grandparents watch and call into and yell about dumb shit that nobody understands.
Yeah.
Now, C-SPAN clips are hilarious, dog.
The best thing is, like they did on John Oliver, was they had the people that they have to talk to because they keep calling in, and they're like, you have to wait 60 days before you call in again.
And then they wait 60 days and they call right the fuck back in. And get banned.
It's like, did you call earlier today? Okay, we have to end this call. I'm sorry.
Raw talk.
Yeah, raw talk. I think all politics should be like raw talk.
Yeah.
It's like somebody on the forums getting a probation.
Raw talk.
So somebody catches like a fucking 1 week probation. As soon as that week's up, they come in and just post some probe shit again immediately. First post, probe right out the gate.
C-SPAM. No, we're not going to play. We're going to play the Violent Femmes. We're not going to play any corn today. C-SPAM. Harrison won the 1840 election, and the Whigs captured majorities in both the House and the Senate. But Harrison would die a month into his term and was replaced by his vice president, former Democrat turned Whig John Tyler.
A raw Jackson time. We always say it wrong. It's raw time.
Jackson was encouraged because Tyler was not bound to party loyalties and praised him when he vetoed the two Whig-sponsored bills to establish a new national bank in 1841. Jackson lobbied for the annexation of Texas. He was concerned that the...
Annexation of Puerto Rico. Oh, sorry, Texas.
Spike don't play Please. Ball with girls.
He was concerned
Spike,
that the
Spike can't read.
Spike hooked on phonics. But Spike phonics not hooked on Spike. Spike downloads supplementary materials.
Oh my god.
Spike joined Republican Party. Education no longer matters. Spike. Spike, homeschool Spike. Still play football.
Holy shit.
Just imagine you did Little Giants, but now, like, they were obsessed with, you know, Spike Minecraft.
Spike's parents think that helmets are woke.
Spike number one, Fortnite.
Oh my god.
the little woke giants.
They got Spikes a he she taking, on their team.
Spike's out there just taking shots to the fucking head with no helmet because helmets are woke.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. Spike's vision's always blurry.
So anyway, Andrew Jackson.
Jackson was concerned that the British could use Texas as a base to threaten the United States and insisted that it was part of the Louisiana Purchase.
Well, it's a reasonable concern at the time.
Tyler signed a treaty of annexation in April of 1844, and it became associated with the expansion of slavery and was not ratified. Van Buren, who had been Jackson's preferred candidate for the Democratic Party, had opposed annexation. Disappointed by Van Buren, Jackson convinced fellow Tennessean James K. Polk, who was then set to be Van Buren's running mate, to run as the Democratic Party's presidential nominee. Polk defeated Van Buren for the nomination and won the general election against Jackson's old enemy, Henry Clay. Meanwhile, the Senate passed a bill to annex Texas, and it was signed on March 1, 1845. Jackson, though, would die of dropsy, tuberculosis, and heart failure at the age of 78 on June 8, 1845.
The classic triumvirate of 19th century disease. I got the dropsy, the tuberculosis, and what was the third one? Sorry.
Heart failure.
Oh, yeah, and heart failure.
I feel like if you have heart failure, you don't need to say that you died of dropsy. Dropsy is just, like, insane swelling. And just like
It's like the liquid like that builds up from heart failure. Yeah, it's associated with myocarditis. In, like, modern terms, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, well, I think myocarditis is just, that's just weak heart, right? But... I said pericarditis. Isn't that the liquid around the...
The pericardium is the liquid around the hearts.
Okay.
And you can have pericarditis and you can also have myocarditis. It's just inflammation of the tissue or of the sac in the case of pericarditis.
Yeah. He died of inflamed sac.
What I'm saying is that homeboy looked like a balloon animal when he died.
We named the dog Dropsy.
Like his hands look like when he blew into a glove.
If you ever see somebody that's in like real bad heart failure, it's crazy because like they're sitting in the bed and they're like, you know, we got them on oxygen and it sounds like they're breathing underwater and you can like push two fingers into their leg. You know, we're checking for edema.
Yeah, pitting edema.
But like, dude, if you push your fingers in there and you pull your fingers back and it's just like pushing your fingers into fucking warm Play-Doh and like
it
just doesn't bounce back.
They put me on one drug for migraines. I think it was Verapamil. Back in the day, mm-hmm. they put me on it. I think it's a beta blocker. And they put me on that.
I think the ACE inhibitor.
Yeah, they put me on it for migraines. Because I have complex, hemiplegic migraine. So, they put me on that. And like 3 or 4 days into it, I noticed that my legs were swollen, like at my ankles, mm-hmm. and I went to my wife, mm-hmm. and I was like, check this out, and I pushed on my ankle, and just left like a divot there, and it just stayed there, mm-hmm. and I was like, yeah, that's not good, so I called the doctor, I was like, I got pitting edema, I'm gonna go ahead and stop this med, all right?
So, what they'll do a lot of times is they'll just put you on a diuretic, pills. Too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, we'll see a lot of people that they'll come in on, like, lisinopril and hydrochlorothiazide.
Lisinopril, how is Trofim doing? All right, so doing Andrew fine. Jackson, is he alive still?
No, Steve, like I said, he died.
Oh, okay.
You know, how we started talking about
it. So, what's his legacy? Like, I mean, it's obviously terrible now, but, like, I don't know.
Well, his legacy is that if somebody is super into Andrew Jackson, you know, you should probably be like very wary of that person unless they're like, yeah, that guy was a complete asshole. And I think it's kind of like weird and funny to like look into things he did.
I got you.
Unless somebody sits there and tells you, hey, listen, Andrew Jackson, I'm going to visit every single one of his statues, monuments, and sites, historic sites in the country. If the next words out of his mouth or her mouth are not to use them as a public restroom, that person is not to be trusted.
If the next words out of his mouth are, I'm putting candles.
what you need to ask them is that our statue's history. And if they tell you yes, that's when you slowly walk away from them.
You back away. You break off. That's when you Grandpa Simpson that shit.
We can have a fight about this offline, but I mean, statues are history, though. Just not the
well. No, in the sense that people make the argument that if you tore down a statue, you're destroying history.
Yeah, you're okay, not.
Yeah, no. That's dumb. No.
Also, statues are historical only if you document the process by which we've gone over in this podcast from the Daughters of the Confederacy episode. If you document the process by which they were suggested that they were built and that they were built and maintained. So like, you have to understand like who did it, why, and when. It was like the idea is there's a lot of stupid people, are ignorant people. Let's not call them stupid. They just don't take the time to look into it. They don't understand all those Confederate statues were put up in like the early 1900s. Like
stupid.
They're ignorant. They're ignorant. They don't understand. Why would they look into it? Like they've been told their whole life that they don't need to. So
they don't have to look into it. At this point, it's being shoved in their face with all the controversy around statues in 2017, 18, 19, like right around that area where statues were the big thing. It was shoved into your face. You couldn't ignore it. Like everywhere you went, they were talking about, hey, these statues are only like 40 years
old. It's all lost cause shit. Yeah, these statues were made in like, they were actually given out as like early McDonald's, like Happy Meal toys. And someone just left it in this park and you're like, this thing's been around since the man died. No, it hasn't.
What I'm going to say, Steve, is that the original, the last remaining Mac tonight has more historical significance than any Confederate general monument.
Yeah, than the Andy Albright Pike golden bust, you know? I don't care who it is, by the way. I don't care if it's someone from up north either. Fucking statues are stupid. And because no human being is without fault. And so putting up a giant statue and pretending that they didn't commit, like, shitty acts in their lifetime, I think it's absolutely ridiculous. I think it's hero worship, and I just can't stand that crap.
Yeah, I only think the statues and monuments of the National Mall should exist because it's fun when they get destroyed in movies.
I'm okay with those being up because it's been so long, but we're a much larger, more diverse society now. So anything that happened in the early 1900s, especially like within plus or minus 40 years of the Civil War, gone. Goodbye.
Gone. Bye.
If it has a person's face on it, I'm vegan when it comes to statues.
Steve is an iconoclast.
Yeah. No. I don't think a lot of people would disagree with me, to be honest with you. Get rid of them all.
But on Jackson's deathbed, surrounded by family and friends and his slaves, he is recorded to have said, "Do not cry. I hope to meet you all in heaven. Yes, all in heaven, white and black."
So he pulled the Lovecraft?
And he would be buried in the same tomb as his wife, Rachel.
I admit it now that I don't need the money that I profited off of this slavery with. I admit that it was wrong. Now that I no longer need the financial, power that comes with owning people and using them for free and cheap labor, I'll go ahead and admit I was wrong. Yeah, my bad.
The cat's also name will change.
No, he went. He went. He went a step note. Further. Also, I've killed the cat.
the McRib has been around longer than the Confederacy, so long live the McRib. Celebrate that shit, bro.
Yeah, well, the Confederacy didn't make any money.
Fly a fucking McRib flag.
Oh, my God. Just the idea that in 2025, with what we know about history, even if you were trying to, like, make an argument for conservatism that you would support any ideals of that time period is so just... It's so myopic and deluded, like that we should not, morally bankrupt. Yeah, we should not respect people who have that opinion. They're allowed to say it, but I'm not going to sit here and say that we should have any respect, nor should we give them any time. But we put them in like media now, and we like platform these people. I don't know. It's ridiculous. I think the most important thing that's happened in the last week is that you found out firsthand that the conservative movement, the vast majority of the conservative movement in this country, has no empathy. None. They have no empathy because until things hurt them, they don't feel it. And now that
they view it as a negative,
now that shit is actually hurting them, it's like you got Ben Shapiro, you got Elon flipping, you got everybody flipping. Of course they're flipping. Why would they flip? Because it hurt them. And they only feel pain that happens to them. So they have no empathy.
I have long said that's the only way for real change in this country is that senators, houses, or house reps need to experience like immediate family pain or to themselves, and then they will immediately jump on the bus of we need to fix XYZ.
Yeah, like fucking what's his name had the best thing ever was Warren Buffett. He said he'd fix a deficit in 5 minutes. Basically, if the if the national debt I think goes up by greater than 3%. Then no government officials are eligible for re-election. You completely remove their ability to go back in office because they fucked up too big. He literally, like, this is the whole, like, women versus men in stock investing. Like, there's these studies, I won't go real long with this, that show that basically women are better investors because they tend to sit on their investments longer than men. Men tend to try to, like, find a good deal, right? And then, like, they day trade and they do all that stuff, and female investors tend not to do that. So literally, for the most part, when it comes to investing, if you just leave your money alone for a longer period of time, you're going to have a higher rate of return. Even if there's an economic downturn, you just leave it. Don't touch it. Don't pull out. Just jam it in there. Don't pull out. So you just leave
double
it.
Double down.
Yeah. Fucking ambiguously gay duo. But yeah, you just leave it there, right? That's literally what Trump should have done. He would be, he could do all his other stupid shit. I'm just talking like devil's advocate. He could do all his other stupid shit that he's doing. And if he just left the economy alone, he wouldn't have the amount of vitriol there is. And I think that's disgusting, but it's true. The economy was actually doing really well at the end of Biden's term. Extremely well. Even though the cost of some things were high, right? Yeah, that's the loop, right? Democrats fix the Republican mistake. Republicans make mistake. Democrat fix the Republican mistake. Republicans fix, you know, it just over and over and over. It's crazy. Anyway, off my soapbox.
Well, on that note,
hope you all don't lose thousands of dollars again tomorrow.
Good night and good luck.
Good night.
Go support the McRib. Love you, bye.